do you have tons of questions about small groups, from how to group your students to what should you even be doing with them once they are in your group? If that is you, this episode is for you. Today, we are talking about 5 really simple strategies that will lead to effective small group instruction and planning that does not take hours. Let's jump in.
Welcome to the Teacher Time Podcast, a space where teachers are empowered to take control of their prep time so they can enjoy their time off guilt-free. You know how teachers are always working long hours? Here, we're changing that norm together by tackling your biggest productivity questions and planning challenges. I'm your host, Stephanie Polovchik, kindergarten teacher, toddler mama, and your very own productivity mentor. I know what it takes to get your important tasks done so you can consistently work your scheduled hours as a teacher, and I'm sharing it all with you here. In this community, we believe that you can be an effective teacher without sacrificing your free time. So let's ditch that constant cycle of overwhelm for teacher time strategies that work. Why? Because your time matters.
Hello, teacher friend. Welcome to another episode of the Teacher Time Podcast. This topic has been requested a lot and for a good reason. Small group instruction is an essential aspect of our teaching, and over recent years, there have been a lot of changes to how we implement small group instruction and just the research behind what we should be doing with our small groups, whether that be in literacy or in math. So small group instruction is really necessary though, and it's beneficial because it allows you to tailor your instruction to a specific group of students' needs. It allows you to provide more one-on-one support for your students and to better observe and assess student understanding, just in a way that is not as possible when you've got, you know, 20 some odd little ones in front of you for a whole group lesson. So in this episode, we're going to explore strategies for small group instruction. And this is more of like a big picture episode where we're talking about 5 strategies that will help you have more effective groups. And then in next week's episodes, we're going to dive a little more deeply into how to format your lesson plans for your small groups. So that's going to be like a little part 2. So I don't know about you, but when I first started running small groups in my classroom, I just had no idea where to start. I mean, it wasn't even just the centers piece of it, right? Because a lot of us do small groups, and then what are our kids who are not with us in a small group going to be doing? They should be doing centers or some kind of independent work. That was overwhelming in and of itself. But then like the question remained, what do I do with the kids that are in front of me? What is an effective way to run my small groups? You know, are these lessons like repeats of our whole group lessons? How do I get them from where they are to where they need to be and really fill in those gaps that they may have? How do I extend learning for students who maybe have already mastered the standard that we're teaching with whole groups? So all of these questions came up to me, and honestly, I just felt very, very much not confident in running small groups, but I think that's pretty common for first year teachers, right? We're still very much in the learning phase. Actually, I don't even want to say that because I'm still 10 years in the learning phase. There's always more to learn. But anyway, all that said, I really relied heavily on books and learning from other teachers, but it took some time to feel confident, and now I feel like I really have a solid system for figuring out how to group students, figuring out what to do with those students once they're in my small group, and just to be more effective overall with those groups of students. So when I sat down to plan out this episode, I really wanted to answer the question, what will help you implement small group instruction without the stress? How can you feel confident and know what should I do with my students when they're in my small groups? And how should I group my students in a way that's going to allow me to meet their needs? So we're kind of going to, like I said, in this episode, cover more of a big picture. It's a broader range, and we're going to start with the first thing that we want to do when we're planning to teach anything, which is to assess our students so that we can identify their strengths and areas for development. So strategy number one is to assess and then progress monitor them. So if you've been meeting with your students in small groups, you've probably been doing some form of assessments and even progress monitoring. But if it's been a while, it might be a good time to check back in and reassess them. And specifically, if you're feeling unsure of where to go next with your small group instruction, it's a good idea to pause the lessons for a bit so that you can assess where your students are, what they need, and maybe even regroup. So the assessments that you use can be formal or informal. And we have a specific literacy screening that we use here at my school throughout the year, but not necessarily in the middle of the year unless students don't meet the benchmark. But that can kind of guide what progress monitoring you do. So even if you don't give an assessment mid-year formally, you can use that to help guide your assessments. So let me give you an example here. When I'm determining what my students' needs are in kindergarten for literacy, I assess their letter identification, their letter sounds. I assess their phonemic awareness as far as, are they able to identify and produce rhyming pairs? Are they able to identify and produce first sounds of words? And then I'm also assessing their ability to blend and segment sounds and their ability to segment sounds, to write them or to read them. So I'm really just taking all of those basic phonemic awareness skills and assessing them to see what are their areas of need and what are the things that they've already mastered. So before you even think about what you should be doing during your small groups, the first thing that needs to happen is an assessment of student understanding. And the way that you figure out what your assessment should be is, what are you trying to teach, right? So if you're teaching, you know, students to read, then you're going to want to assess phonemic awareness. If you're teaching students about counting, then you're going to want to assess their ability to count a set to find out how many, count a specific set, a given set. So like count 12, you know, for example. So strategy number two is to group your students based on area of need. So you may have heard an approach like, you know, having strategy groups. And this is based off of like a specific need. If you've been grouping students based on their quote unquote level, that could be a reason why you're feeling stuck on what to do with your students, because a level doesn't necessarily inform instruction as it is, right? You need to know what's behind that level. But data does. And If you're in that boat, I totally get it. And I've definitely felt like that before. In the past, I would group students based on their reading level. And then I would wonder where to start with their small group instruction, because I would be like, okay, this is my level B group. So now what do I do with them? Because there are so many tiny steps that go into moving students forward in their reading understanding. Same thing with math. Maybe you've grouped students into generic groups, right? Like high, on level, or below, or maybe like color groups or animal groups. And there's nothing wrong with giving your groups like an identifying name to help you know who you're working with. That can be really helpful when you're like mapping out who you're going to work with during the week. But when you're thinking about what you're going to teach those students, I want to encourage you to switch to a needs-based way of grouping your students for a few reasons. So grouping students into levels can actually hinder the way that we look at our students, and it can create more of a fixed idea in our minds about what those students are capable of, even if it's just subconscious, and where they stand, right? So instead of categorizing them based on a level, group them based on what their next learning step should be. And I'm going to give you an example in a minute. The other reason is grouping students into what they need will actually bring you more clarity on what you should do with them during your lessons. So I know you probably already know, you know, group students based on, you know, where they fall, right, on an assessment. You may like have been like, okay, these are my students who scored below this. These are my students who scored, you know, here. But what is it that they're missing? What is it that they need to learn? And group students based on those skills, those areas of need. So remember, as I'm saying all of this, small groups should be really fluid. And as students master different skills and you're progress monitoring them, you may find yourself moving students around every couple of weeks. So just keep that in mind. I want to give you an example of the way that I do this. So after assessing my students, I saw themes of what the students needed, and they fell into these categories. So solidifying letter sounds would be one category. Another category would be segmenting sounds in words. And another group of students was maybe working on blending sounds in words. And then finally, maybe there was a group of students who was really working on furthering their decoding skills within books. So you can see how this kind of moves through different stages, right? Where different stages of phonemic awareness, where like group number one is really working on their sounds. They're working on a sound, letter sound level. Group number two and three are working within a word level. And group number four is working on decoding within a text. So once these needs were apparent, I was able to group my students based on that data, and I could use that data to decide what we needed to be doing in our small groups. It made it really clear for me that, hey, these students, we need to focus on strategies that are going to help them segment and hear each phoneme in a word. I know I'm using literacy. I've got literacy on the brain, I guess, as I'm recording this episode, because I have been going through the letters training. And so I think it's just in my brain. But this applies to any subject area where you want to use small groups. Group them based on their need, the skill they are working on solidifying, and that is going to give you so much clarity about what you need to be doing with them in your small groups. Speaking of, that's what we're headed into with strategy number three. So when you plan your small group lessons, I want to encourage you to use a framework. So yes, we're going to use data to plan out the actual content of the lessons, but like, what should the flow of the lesson look like? That's what I mean by framework. What is the first part of the lesson, next part, last part? So we use frameworks for our whole group lessons. We need to have those for small groups too. So should there be a warm-up? How long should it be? All that good stuff. Having a framework for your small group lessons will allow you to plan faster because you won't be wondering what to do. You'll have a plan started for you. So like when you sit down, you're going to look, okay, warm-up. All right, what am I going to do for that? Next, teaching skill. All right, how do I introduce the new topic? So here's the flow of our lessons, whether that be for math, reading, phonics, whatever it may be. So I always start with a warm-up of previously learned skills. And the objective here is fluency and retrieval. So it's to help build automaticity and to give students practice with their working memory. And then the next part is your new teaching points. So this is the main objective of your lesson and where you're going to teach them something. For example, with students who are struggling with letter sounds, I would introduce the letter spelling and the sound, and I would model the production of this sound in various ways with a mirror, with a hand motion, and maybe even read a book that incorporates that sound, right? And then it comes to your students' practice, and this practice with a new skill should be guided. So you're going to be supporting them a little bit with this, at least on the first day of learning that new concept with you, right? So think about like the gradual release of responsibility here. And so leading with that letter example, we would practice making the letter in sand, maybe building it with Play-Doh. Maybe we'd do a movement activity where they had to find the letter on a piece of paper that was spread out and, you know, read it and say that sound. So finally, from there should be some sort of closing or assessment activity, something more independent where you're checking to see if they're grasping this and making notes about what your next steps should be. And this is more of like I said, the you do. It's very informal. It can be with my letter sounds example again, that would look like finding the letter amongst others, maybe doing a sort where they find pictures that begin with that letter and pictures that don't begin with that letter. So it really just depends on what your objective is. But as you can see, the little flow here is warm up, teaching point, guided practice, and then some kind of closing or assessment or independent practice. And because I feel like this could be a little bit of a sticking point for you, we are going to run through specifically a small group lesson example and how to format those lesson plans in next week's episode. And I've also included a link to a small group template that incorporates this exact framework. So you can check that out in the show notes. All right, we are jumping into strategy number four, but let's do a quick recap. So strategy number one, assess and progress monitor to better inform what you should be doing with your students. Strategy number two is to group your students based on area of need instead of by level. Strategy number three is to plan lessons using a small group framework. And we're going to dive more deeply into this next week. And now strategy number four is to focus more on quality of instruction rather than the number of minutes. So a lot of times I hear the question, how long should my small groups be? I don't have a ton of time. And I think the point here is not to focus on the amount of time. It's to focus on what are you doing with them? Are you providing them with explicit quality instruction? Do you have activities and lessons planned that is going to help take them from where they are to where they need to be? I would say anywhere from like 15 to 20 minutes for kindergarten through second grade and like no more than 30 minutes for third grade. And I know that like if you're thinking about interventions, there could be different guidance on how long an intervention needs to be, but I'm talking about like small groups where this is like in the general education classroom, small group instruction that you're providing to better support your students on where they are. And if you have a solid framework for your lessons plus activities based on the data, that's going to lead to quality instruction. So don't feel like your lessons need to be super long with small groups. I remember when, you know, guided reading was all the rage, and the guidance was to have lessons that lasted 25 minutes with my students, with my kindergartners. And, you know, a lot of times within the small group, the kids could keep up and they stayed engaged because we were jumping from activity to activity. It's not like we were doing one thing for 25 minutes. But the problem becomes when you have students who are in independent centers. That's a long time, especially if you're meeting with multiple groups. So rather than focusing so much on the amount of time that you have to plan or to meet with your small groups, focus on using the time that you do have and making sure that the instruction that you're providing is quality, is explicit. And if you do those things that we talked about in strategies 1 through 3, you're going to have that. All right, finally, strategy number 5 is to create a schedule for when you are going to meet with each group. Don't just wing this. And here's the thing, I don't want you to feel like you have to meet with every single group every single day, because think about it, that's a lot of independent time for all of your students. Now, I guess that this would depend on the amount of groups that you have and the amount of time that you're spending, but in general, I would think that most of us won't meet with every single group every single day. Again, like I said, this is going to definitely depend, but having that schedule and planning it out based on, okay, who needs what, you know, how often do I need to meet with my students who are already meeting all of the general standards. Maybe they just need a little more extension and a little push to keep them going. I probably don't need to meet with them as much as I need to meet with those students who are at risk or for, you know, falling behind. And so just mapping out when you're going to meet with them and knowing that it is okay if you can't meet with every single group every single day, because it's also beneficial for students to have some independent time too. And there are other times in the day when you can support students with the most needs. So, you know, maybe you pull students in a small group during independent work time during phonics or during independent work time during writing. So there are other times when you can support your students. You don't always have to do it during that, like, quote unquote, center's time. Okay, I feel like I just ran through a lot of info, but hopefully it's going to be really helpful for you as you plan out your small groups. I want to do another quick recap here. So strategy number one is to assess students and look for needs. Look for, you know, similarities to group your students. And then strategy number two, group your students based on those needs, not on a level or a number. Strategy three, have a framework for your lessons. Strategy four, focus on quality, not quantity. And strategy five, create a schedule. So if you need a small group template, I want you to go ahead and check out that link in the show notes, because I have templates to help you plan out when you're going to meet with your groups, templates to help you with what you're going to do during your small group lessons, including activity ideas. So go check that out. But first, I have a question for you. Do you get stuck wondering what kinds of activities to do with your students during small groups? Next week, we are going to continue this conversation with tips and strategies for creating clear and specific objectives, warm-up activities, new skills, practice activities, and assessments for small group instruction. So make sure to tune in next Tuesday for that episode. Now go download that small group template and get started with more effective small groups today. Talk to you soon.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If you loved what we talked about here and want to connect further, you can find everything you need on my website, www.teachinglittleleaders.com. And if you loved this episode in particular, share it with your teacher friends by taking a screenshot and posting to Instagram stories. Make sure to tag me at Teaching Little Leaders so I can see it and reshare. I'll see you next Tuesday. Have a fabulous week.